All right. Tonight we're on Perek Pei Beis. Tonight's title is Chapter 82, Here Comes the Judge. A lot we've been talking about, and a lot we do talk about in Tehillim, has to do with Rachmanis, on mercy, on David HaMelech's pleas for mercy from Hashem for all kinds of various scenarios. In this particular capital, we're going to be talking not about mercy, but about justice and the quest for justice. Now, this capital happens to have been the one that the Levim sang for Tuesday in the Beis HaMikdash. And thus, every morning after davening, every morning that it's a Tuesday after davening, we say this capital in remembrance of the fact that the Levim sang this capital. On day three, Hashem revealed His wisdom to the world. And because this capital talks about justice, and Hashem's wisdom is equated with justice, this was declared to be the capital for Tuesday. Because we learn in Pirkei Avos that din, or justice, is one of the three essential things that the world needs to survive. The other being emes and shalom. There's sort of a hint or a remez, on day three, Hashem made vegetation, desha. The initials of desha happen to be emes, din, and shalom. It's sort of an allusion, if you will, a hint to the fact as to why this is the capital for the third day as well. But nonetheless, the fact that Hashem revealed His wisdom on that day is enough. And we have all, from our learning in the Chumash, learned the importance of proper judging, and judges are not allowed to take bribes. And we know that Chazal tell us that every judge who judges truly becomes a partner with Hashem in sustaining the world. But we have to think for a moment about how very important Hashem considers justice. Now, we know there are things in the Torah that are absolutely at the very top of the list of things that Hashem will not tolerate, such as idol worship. I think we can all agree idol worship would be one of your big, big no-nos. Yet, in the days of Noah, the world was destroyed not because of idol worship, but the world was destroyed because of too much theft. Too much theft. Oh, Chicago should have been destroyed a long time ago. Too much theft? All right? How does anybody last in Chicago if the too much theft is what is a problem? Right? But when people disregarded justice in the society basically broke down. It was lawless, it was cruel, there was rampant corruption. There was no real order and justice and the rule of law. And that the world cannot tolerate. That's just not that Hashem cannot tolerate the actions of the people. The world cannot tolerate a society or a world that is not based on some sort of societal reciprocal justice. A lawless society is one that does not just have Hashem angry at it, but has lost its right to exist. A person who worships Avodah Zorah, Chas V'Shalom, could always do teshuva. A society that is lawless has lost its right to exist. Interestingly enough, of course, one of the Sheva Mitzvahs, B'nai Noach, the B'nai Noach are obligated to only observe seven mitzvahs. So there's only seven of them. They must be pretty critical mitzvahs. One of them is to have a system of justice. That means that you have to have courts of justice in every city, or state, or province, area, or whatever you want to call it. And those courts are supposed to judge the people with whether or not they're keeping the other six laws of B'nai Noach. So the first six laws are worthless unless you have the seventh, which is you have to have courts and justices to enforce the first six, or else the first six just sort of fade away. Now, furthermore, the importance of justice and courts is emphasized by the strong, 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 strong emphasis Chazal put on the prohibition against Jews taking their legal matters to non-Jewish courts. This is something that in our day is a little bit better known, but it's still something that people often do not realize the severity of. In the Gemara in Gittin, it says, any place where you find Gentile courts, if their law is the same as the Jewish law, you still are not allowed to go to those courts. Why? Because it says in Shemos, these are the judgments that you shall set before you. In other words, you have to use the judgments and the rules that were given to you by Hashem and not given to you by the non-Jewish courts, even if it's the same thing. If Reuven sues Shimon and wins $50 in non-Jewish court, and in Jewish court he would have won the same $50, he's committing a terrible, terrible avera. Rashi says, and I quote, he brings Jewish law to be adjudicated before Gentiles, he makes a chilul Hashem, and he gives chashivas value to idols. When our enemies are judges, it is a testimony to the superiority of their system, that their courts are better than the laws given to us by Hashem. Yes?
What about for a divorce, you go to both? You do the Beis Din and you go to... You can't get a divorce without...
Correct, but only because the Beis Din gives you permission to do so. In other words... Hold on to that thought for 1 second. I'll quote one other thing, and then I'll answer that question. The Rambam also says that if you take a case to non-Jewish court, even if it's the exact same judgment, you're considered in halacha to be a rasha, to be an evil person, and it is though, and I quote, you blasphemed the law and the name of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Shulchan Aruch goes even further. It quotes the Rambam's words, and he says that even if all the parties agree, in other words, I didn't take you, quote unquote, to non-Jewish court. We all agree. We made a contract. And in the contract it said, this, as all contracts do, this contract shall be arbitrated under the laws of the state of Illinois. Says the Shulchan Aruch, that is awesome. You cannot arbitrate, yes?
We had a case with Rabbi Schwartz, mm-hmm. where we had a person who was a thief and he was Jewish mm-hmm. in our business, and Harold called Rabbi Schwartz to ask him what to do, and he said, call the police and send him to jail.
Good.
Because in Europe, there was an issue of anti-Semitism and they would treat mm-hmm. Jews differently. He said, in America it's not that.
Well, we have a couple of problems. The first problem is we don't have in Gullis, and we don't have any criminal authority. If Rabbi Schwartz had a criminal division in his Beis Din, he would have been happy to send out his police force, arrest the guy, and have a trial. But we don't have that authority. So therefore, there's very little choice in the matter. And what Mrs. Cooper was asking is that there are certainly cases we've all heard of where, as a matter of course, either as a matter of course or in a specific case, a person went to a non-Jewish court with the blessing of the Jewish authorities. So if you go to a Beis Din, and the Beis Din cannot settle your case, let's say the best example is the other person won't come to Beis Din. Mm-hmm. Beis Din has no power to do anything about that. You know, in the old days, they did. They sent the police force. We think of Beis Din as like nice rabbis in the room that they had police force and guns and swords, and if you didn't come to Beis Din, they went and they grabbed you and they dragged you to Beis Din. Right? Taking someone to Beis Din meant taking them to Beis Din. And if they didn't want to come, the police would be happy to come and slap the cuffs on and bring them to Beis Din. Beis Din was the authority. So now we don't have that. So if you go to Beis Din and Beis Din cannot settle your case, Beis Din will give you permission to use the non-Jewish courts. If Beis Din gives you permission to use the non-Jewish courts, you have not violated the principle that we just laid down. The principle we laid down is that if you go to a non-Jewish court, you are saying that their system of justice and their laws are at least equal to or superior to the laws given to us by Hashem via Moshe Rabbeinu. But you're not saying that. You went to the laws of Moshe Rabbeinu. But because we're in Gullis, we had no way to, what I said to make my religion fall off there. because we're in Gullis, Beis Din couldn't do anything about it. But you showed that you wanted to first go to Beis Din. You showed that the rule of the Torah was the number one. But since the Beis Din can't do anything about it, they're saying, okay, we give you permission to go to the second best. Take your case and go to court. And that will happen many times. If you'll try and take someone to Beis Din in a business dispute, and the other person says, I won't come. So in Europe, if you could excommunicate someone. You have a lot of peer pressure and communal pressure and things you could do to not literally force, but to make sure that to not come to Beis Din was a serious matter. If you were excommunicated from your town in Europe, you couldn't get buried, you couldn't get married, you couldn't eat, you couldn't go to shul. Your life was a disaster. If you get excommunicated in Chicago, All right? You take the 615 United to New York, and nobody knows who you are. So we don't have that same ability to put pressure on people to come to Bay State, except maybe in very dramatic cases where the whole country knows that somebody, you know, has done something. And plus, we're a fractious people, and, you know, this Bay State says you have to come, and the other guy goes to another Bay State, and you don't have to come, and the next thing you know, you're involved in it. But the principle is that if you go to a non-Jewish court ahead of a Jewish Bay State, you're saying that as far as you're concerned, the non-Jewish laws are just as good as the laws given for by Hashem. If you went to try and do the laws of Hashem, but you couldn't, and the Beis Din said, listen, we don't want you to suffer monetarily, so we're going to give you permission to pursue this matter in court, even though you shouldn't, but because we can't get the person to come to Beis Din. Now, in the case of divorces, the Beis Din will require someone who gets a get to get a civil divorce, because of the fact that that's required in this country, right? In order to legally, according to the laws of the country, get remarried. So Beis Din is requiring you to do that. It's not that you're doing two separate things. It's not that you're saying, I'm going to get a get from Beis Din, and then, you know, like maybe next Tuesday when my calendar is free, I think I'll look and see what the civil court's doing. You get a civil divorce because Beis Din tells you to. That's the way it's supposed to work anyway. And there are all kinds of details about this that we're not really going to get into right now, because we also have, of course, the famous rule that a person is obligated to follow the laws of the country that they live in. And when it comes to business dealings and things like that, that can certainly apply. But we have a concept here that justice and the idea of judges carrying out justice is so important that a kapitel about it was chosen to be one of the daily kapitels, of which only a handful were selected, of course. We only have a certain number of days, but we have 150 kapitela. And when justice wasn't being done between people, in the times of Noah, the world was destroyed. The world was destroyed, whereas there were many times that people worshipped idols and the world was not destroyed. And one of the seven mitzvahs of the B'nai Noah, the last mitzvah, the seventh, is to have a court system in every city to enforce the first six. And justice is so important that you're not allowed to go and use Jewish court, non-Jewish courts, in order to achieve your justice. Now that's the first half of the introduction to Kapitel Pei Beis. Kapitel Pei Beis was written by Asaph. And at the risk of sounding redundant, if you've come to previous classes, we have mentioned Asaph. Asaph, of course, has written many kapitelach. It is second only to David HaMelech in the number of kapitelach that he wrote. And Asaph was a Navi. He did have Nevuah. And there is some lack of clarity as to exactly when Asaph lived. There is an opinion that he was one of the sons of Korah. And there is another opinion that Asaph was somewhat of a contemporary of David HaMelech. And we've seen a number of his kapitelach that Asaph is, for lack of a better word, a strong supporter of David. I don't know if that's the right word or not, meaning that he often writes at length trying to show why not supporting David is not the correct Torah approach. Right, so as his supporter, he very strongly tries through his writing to support the house of David. And there's an opinion that he was a contemporary somewhat of David HaMelech's. Now, because of the fact that he had Nevuah, he often was able to see what kind of things would befall Klal Yisrael. Rashi and Radak, both of them, agree that this kapitel is describing the times of the Melech Yehoshaphat. Now, after Shlomo HaMelech, we know that the kingdom split into the kingdom of Yehuda and the kingdom of Israel. And in general, the kings of Yehuda were righteous individuals that tried to keep the Jewish people on the correct path. And in general, the kings in the northern kingdom of Israel were not so, although there were certainly exceptions to that rule. So Yehoshaphat was the Melech of Yehuda. And Yehoshaphat was an excellent Melech. He was a righteous individual, and he ruled for 25 years. It was definitely one of the most successful periods of the kingdom of Yehuda, because of the fact that he was a Yerushimayim and a very sincere individual. The people came to admire him and to feel that he had their best interest in heart, and He spent most of his time and efforts working on strengthening things in observance, meaning strengthening learning and strengthening schools and strengthening Avodas Hashem and making sure that there wasn't any improper Avodah Zorah and supervising education and making sure that the Levim knew exactly how to proceed in the Beis HaMikdash. He was very concentrated on those areas, as opposed to many of the kings who had spent a lot of time fighting wars or putting down this and that in the people. He spent most of his time doing that, and the way he did that is he recruited groups of Kohanim and Levim and Talmid HaChachamim, and he had them travel around the country constantly as sort of like roving bands of judges. And at the same time, he strengthened the civil administration, because what had happened is, as the kingdom went longer and longer and more successful, people spread out more and more. From the population centers, they became more and more dispersed. They lived more and more in what we would call outlying areas. Now, if you're in an outlying area, you're not very well served by the Beis Din in town. First of all, in town could be a three-day journey away. So he tried to divide everything into districts and sub-districts, and there would be judges in the districts and sub-judges in the sub-districts. He was a very organized individual. No, okay, that's fine. And he tried to bring that organization to see that everybody, even the most outlying area, got every service they needed in terms of justice, and that they knew what they were doing in terms of Judaism. Now, lest the story be too upbeat at this point, Yehoshaphat did make a few mistakes, and a couple of them were a doozy. Yehoshaphat, I just said that he was a very sincere individual, and he was, and he sincerely felt that if he could just reach out to the rulers of the northern kingdom of Israel, they could just all work things out and live in peace. Well, that doesn't work. But he tried it anyway. And the Melech of Yisrael was a fellow named Achav. Achav, you know, on the Rasha scale of wickedness, Achav was way up there. But Yehoshaphat was sure that if his daughter, Yehoshaphat's son, married Achav's daughter, then they'd be one big happy family, and he would be able to show Achav the correct way to do things, and Achav would be happy to see how things should be done correctly. That did not work. It had a short-term effect in that there was no immediate warring and actual physical violence, but it didn't last very long, and it was quite a disaster. And in fact, Achav wanted to wage war against Syria. So Yehoshaphat, wanting to be a good, peaceful guy, said, well, we'll help you. And it will be like together, one big happy family. So Achav was killed, the army was defeated, and Yehoshaphat barely escaped with his life. When he came back, the Nevi'im really tore into him for the fact that he had tried to make this deal with the kingdom of Israel when they worshipped idols. So he said, you're right, I guess I was wrong. And he just went back to his idea of trying to strengthen all of the justice that was provided within the borders of the kingdom of Yehuda. That was a big mistake. He started off by strengthening justice, and when he was strengthening justice for all, so to speak, he was very successful. When he tried to reach out and to say, you know what, let's extend this and do this and do that, and he lost the concept of just judge everything simply and fairly, he suffered terrible defeat, almost cost him his life, and indeed he had to go back to his original plan of traveling up and down the country, making sure that everyone had justice. That's what Asaph saw through his nevuah that encouraged him to write this particular kapitel. And the kapitel is only 8 pesukim long. So let's take a look at the kapitel now. That was a little bit lengthier introduction than we usually have, but we want to understand sometimes, when we know about the lives of these people, it's very kedai to see I don't think that Melech Yehoshaphat is a subject that is studied day and night in the Jewish community. And unfortunately, these things are just not, it's not just it's a lesson for today. Everything that happened throughout Jewish history, we should be studying to make sure we don't repeat the same mistakes. Verse 1, Pasuk Aleph. Mizmor la'asaf, Elokim nitzav ba'adas keil, v'kerev Elokim yishpot. This is a song of Asaf. Hashem stands in the congregation of Hashem. In the middle of the judges, he will judge. Everybody got that? So, Hashem standing in the middle of the congregation of Hashem doesn't mean that the congregation of Hashem means judges. When judges gather together and they're doing their assigned function and executing justice, they're in a das keil. They are a congregation of Hashem. For Hashem is the ultimate judge. And judges on earth are like a representative of Hashem. Ad masai tishpetu avo. How long will you judge unjustly, ufnei reshoyim tisu sela, and favor the wicked forever? Now, favoring the wicked means giving preferential treatment to one or other of the litigants. Either because, let's say, one litigant has more money or more stature, or another litigant perhaps is poor and has very little stature and so is sort of run over in the process of justice. That's called judging unjustly and favoring the wicked. Instead, shiftu dal v'yasom, judge the poor and the orphan, ani vorash hatziku, justify the humble and the impoverished. Justify, like hatziku is a tricky word to translate. And if you take out a lot of different copies of Tehillim, you'll find a lot of different ways that it's translated. However, the Al-Sheikh says that it is from the word tzedakah, which you see the root in the middle of there, hatzdiku, and that he would read this, judge the poor and the orphan, establish up tzedakah for the poor and the impoverished. Now, what does that mean, really? So, it means that one should be like David. In Shmuel Beis, it says, David executed justice and hatzdiku for all of his people. And it uses that same word in Shmuel Beis to describe David as having been a shofet and hatzdiku his people. What does that mean? If you're judging them fairly, it would seem tzedakah is out the window. Tzedakah means, you're a billionaire, you're a pauper, and you're suing each other over $1 million. So let's give it to the poor. That seems reasonable, right? If you're a judge, you have to look at the merits of the case and see what kind of contracts they had, etc., etc. So what David HaMelech used to do, if a rich person and a poor person came before him in judgment, is he would decide the case according to the merits. And then, after that, and he would paskin, so-and-so owes so-and-so a certain amount of money. And then after that was done, he'd stiku people. He would consider the situation. And if the poor person lost, he'd give them the money to pay them. So he would judge the people, and then he'd tzedakah them. First, you have to judge them. And then you can take the case into their account. So they're saying, be like David and Melech. Judge them, poor, orphan, rich, no matter what. The Torah says, this is the law. You come before me, I give you the law. Then, when the law is done, then you have to be atziku. Now you have to treat them with tzedakah. That poor person might not be able to pay $1 million judgment. So David and Melech would give him $1 million and say, fine, now pay your judgment. But while the court case is going on, whether the person can pay it doesn't matter. But then you have to look at the people. So you judge them, and then you execute charity towards them. Hatzdiku, besides being translated as tzedakah, is also translated as execute. To execute a plan is to be matzdik a plan. So you judge them, and then you tzedakah them. You give them a charitable review. Sounds like great advice, doesn't it?
No.
No? Why not?
Because if a poor person is a thief, and then you're going to give them the money
to
pay anyway, what
did you
learn?
Oh, it's not necessarily that David HaMelech would give it. David HaMelech would evaluate the situation. If the poor person is a thief and deserves to go to jail, then fine. But perhaps the poor person, you know, was for some reason a victim of circumstances.
It could be good, but I think, you know, if they go into court knowing that they're pretty much, if they present a good case, that they'll be covered.
Oh, I don't think that that's where David HaMelech is going with this. First of all, there aren't that many people like David HaMelech, but that's the ideal judge. I think that where he's going with that is that I have to decide who's right and who's wrong. But there's two kinds of right and wrong. There's right and wrong in what is the law in this case, and there's right and the wrong in what should really happen here in a moral sense. So sometimes the strict justice of what the law says and what we think is right in the moral sense might conflict with one another. So if you have two people, and it's clear that the poor person was taken advantage of for whatever reason, and morally David HaMelech would feel that the poor person was taken advantage of and should be made whole, but nonetheless, the law didn't specifically say that. So for example, let's say that the poor person had been swindled, but for whatever reason, that couldn't be proven under the technical rules of evidence. So David HaMelech would have to say, I'm sorry, but I see no legal basis, Mr. Poor Person, for giving you the money back. I know you claim you were swindled, and it looks that way, but after weighing the evidence and all of the Torah's rules of evidence, it's not, you don't have the proper witnesses, and it's not sufficient in order for me to be able to say the official din is you have to get your money back. Case closed. Now, I, as David HaMelech, King of Israel, order you, Mr. Rich Person, to give me $1 million. And he gives that $1 million. So the moral situation looked different to David than the legal situation, and he couldn't live with that, and as the king, he had the power to rectify that. And that's an ideal judge, a person who can handle both a legal situation and a moral situation is really a superior judge. So Asaph is saying that's really the way to judge. Judge both the legal situation and the... I don't know if moral is the right word, but the maybe ethical. I'm not sure what the word I'm looking for is, but the ethical charitable situation. I mean, how many times have most of us ever thought, boy, this person really deserves to be taken to court? No question. But then you figure out what a lawyer would cost, and you figure out, do you really have the evidence? What about that other lawyer is going to get up and he's going to get you all twisted and tongue-tied, and you're going to get all your evidence mixed up and have the pictures out of order, and you're never going to win anyway. So there's justice and there's legal decision. So if you went to court, you might lose, and even if you won, you'd have all the attorney fees, you'd lose anyway. So our claim is good. So David HaMelech would fix that for you.
Judge Judy.
Judge Judy. What happened to the guy with the gray hair?
Judge, I don't know. Judge Judy.
What happened to him? Anyway, so David HaMelech would judge both the legal situation as well as how things should be in the perfect world, true justice. All right, and he had the ability to do both of those. So that's the ideal judge. And further, he says, "Paltu dal ve'evyon, release the poor and the needy." In verse 4, "Miyad reshoyim hatsilu, and save them from the hands of the wicked." Now, when it says release the needy and the poor, so judges were not allowed to sit in their courtroom and judge. They had to go out and find injustices. They had to travel around, go out into the community of whatever. Let's say they were responsible for District 32B, wherever that was. So we think of a judge in 32B sits in the courtroom, and, you know, case 32, come on in, and if there's no cases today, well, we'll take an early lunch. That wasn't saying, go find, release the poor and needy. The people who need your justice are out there. The fact that they didn't hire a lawyer and come into your courtroom, so what? Go find them. That's what he's saying. You want to be a real judge? Go find the people that need justice and have a court case. Miyad reshoyim, I say, save them from the wicked people. That people who are poor and cannot necessarily marshal the resources to bring their case to court are people that are going to be taken advantage of. Certainly we see that today, right? But with employers, business, whatever the case may be, if it's not, you know, landlord-tenant, if it's not felt that you have the ability or resources to bring a legal case against someone, like, you're in a very much worse position. And you're much more likely to be taken advantage of. But with judges traveling throughout the community they serve, looking for injustice, really, your landlord told you what? Bring him over here. You know, court now in session to my dining room table. And what, you know, it puts a little bit different perspective and a little bit more fear into Mr. Landlord before he takes advantage of tenant, knowing that justice is not something you go get in the courtroom. It knocks on your front door and demands to know why there's no heat in your tenant's house. In Pasuk K in verse 5, it says, Lo'yodu v'lo yavinu. They didn't know and they didn't understand. Dechashecha is halchu. That they will walk in darkness. Imotu kol moste oret. That all the foundations of the earth will totter. Not understanding is the judges themselves don't even understand the depth of their responsibility. That a judge who does not judge properly or is corrupt is said to be judged by Hashem himself. Now we're all judged by Hashem. Being judged by Hashem himself, it means it's a higher, more immediate, that Hashem responds immediately to judges not conducting themselves properly. And he says they don't even know, they don't understand. Most judges don't understand the responsibility as the representative of Hashem that they carry in the world. They walk in darkness. Most judges walk in darkness. Now, it could be that it means they're taking bribes and things like that, but even a judge that feels that they're doing an honest job, they walk in darkness, it says. Their eyes are closed because their opinions and their ideas and their frame of reference is warped by their own feelings and their own desires. And you see all the time in American society today, when you read about a major court case, what's the first thing they tell you in the news report? The liberal judge who will decide this, or the conservative judge who will decide this. The press has already decided what the judge is going to judge based on their political affiliations. That's darkness of judges, says Asa. A judge, if you can guess what a judge is going to decide before you walk in, that judge is already not doing their job as a judge. A judge is supposed to be an impartial representative of Hashem's law. If you know, if this judge, well, this judge always rules conservatively, or that kind of thing. So it's not that the judge is taking bribes or purposely trying to do anything, but they're blinded by not seeing that they're supposed to be an objective opinion in the world. And it makes the foundations of the world shake, because justice is the pillar of the world. And if justice is not served, then the world becomes shakier. Even, you know, even in our times with Jewish judges, everybody is to a certain extent a victim of their own frame of reference. If you tend to think that poor people get a bad shake, or if you tend to think various things, that tends to color your thoughts. One of the things that makes a successful and well-known and respected dayan or posek is they're able to rise above the coloration and the color that they see the world in. Anybody can look up in a book and tell you what halacha is. But if you have a case that's complicated to decide, you need someone who's not going to be colored by their own ideas of what to be done. Is going to look at a case objectively. I'll give you an example. If you had a life and death emergency situation, you wouldn't just call anybody, would you? You wouldn't just open up the phone book to R, and the first guy that had a rabbi in front of his name, you'd call him and you'd say, listen, by the way, I'm lying here on the surgical table. Can we do this operation now? No, you'd want someone, you know, who was a little bit maybe higher caliber than that. Someone who wasn't colored by their opinion, who could look at the situation and try and give you an unbiased and uncolored viewpoint as to what should be done. And that's it. He says, if you walk in darkness, darkness is your coloring. We would call it today rose-colored or whatever that is. So he's calling it darkness, the same idea. If you're looking at it through colored glasses, it's like looking at it through darkness. Ani Amarti Alokim Atem Uvnei Elyon Kulchem. Verse 6 is, I said, you are angelic creatures, and all of you are angels of the Most High. A good judge is considered to be closer to Hashem than anyone else. Because what can Hashem do that people can't do is judge. Hashem can judge us all because He knows the facts of the situation. He knows what we're thinking, not thinking, etc. So even though a human judge can't do that, when a human judge renders an impartial decision, that is as close to emulating the behavior of Hashem as a person can do. Thus says Hashem, you are angels of the Most High. You rendering an impartial judgment, an impartial decision in judging the situation, and is just like what I do, says Hashem. Hashem has a little more facts at His disposal, maybe? But nonetheless, that's the compliment that Hashem gives to a judge. That you're the person who's most close to what I do. However, b'chein ke'adam te'usin, if you do it like a man, you'll die. L'cha'echad asarim tipolim, and you'll fall. But if you're a judge and you do a bad job, then you're like the worst of men. A judge is almost like a win or lose proposition. Either you're higher than everybody, you're most like Hashem, or you're plummeting downwards. So he finishes by saying, Kuma Elokim, arise Hashem, Shafta Ha'aretz, judge the earth, Ki Ata Tincha B'chol HaGayim, for you inherit all the nations. So judge the earth either means all of the other nations or us included. But either way, it's asking Hashem to remove corrupt justice. Now we talk about corrupt justice all the time, and it seems like almost a meaningless thing. We talk, every day in Shemona Esrei we ask for judges, and we talk about justice and judges, and we want our judges like the days of old, and half the time people's eyes glaze over because they have no idea what do you mean the judges of old? I'm going to try and explain it like this. If you could get up in the morning and know that every interaction you had with other people and every activity you engaged in and every action that you took would be judged by other people 100% fairly and accurately, you would be a different person. We live so much and for so long with the idea that, it doesn't work that way. There's no way to work that way. There's no such thing as you're going to get a fair shake every second of your life. It just doesn't happen that way. Whether it's, however it is, whether it's in literally a court case, or whether it's in your job, or whether it's in your house, whatever the case may be, there's no such thing as everything is a fair shake. Sometimes it could be very dramatic. The water broke and flooded your street, and the city is never going to pay for it. The city sent out claim forms, and my grandchildren will probably still be waiting for a result from those claim forms. That's not a fair shake, is it? Fine, it's what Hashem wants, and it's the way the world is. But it's not a fair shake. That's not justice. Justice would be that there was a judge here ordering the city of Chicago to take my car up on the tow truck and go have it fixed and brought back to me. That's one 10-minute example. The justices of old are people like Yehoshaphat, who made sure that the length and breadth of every part of Eretz Yisrael was filled with people that did not sit in the courtroom. A judge didn't sit in the courtroom. The judge went out to the community square. He went to the shuls. He went to the schools. He went to community activities to see if anybody wasn't getting in a fair shake. And they weren't getting a fair shake. They are now. Hey, city, you bring that tow truck over here and fix that car. And you could count on that. You could get up in the morning and you could count on that like you count on the sun coming up. Hard to imagine. Hard to even imagine that we don't have. Hard to even imagine how little of that we really have. But that's what justice is. And that's what it means that justice is a pillar of the world. And that's why when that fell apart to the point where there was no justice left in the days of Noah, the world had to be destroyed. For no one to ever get a fair shake and every person to just do what they want, the world can't exist. Can't exist like that, with no justice. When we say bring back our judges of old, Shimon Esrei, we want people like Yehoshaphat. We want people who are going to make sure that there are teams of Levim and teams of Dayanim going up and down the countryside, up and down your street and your school and your shul, and your communal dinner and your Aneinu Brachos party, right? Making sure that if any justice needs to be done, someone is right there for you. That's what we're asking for when we ask for justice. And that's what we're asking for when asking Hashem to rise up and to get rid of the bad justice in the world. Now, let's take that one step further and see what the more subtle message that Asaf has for us is. We've said before that, at least in my opinion, for whatever that's worth, the pesukim that Asaf writes tend to be very different than what David HaMelech writes. We've seen before some of David HaMelech's pesukim are so beautiful and so flowery, but we, in our time, have to spend time figuring out how the verse goes together and what it means, because it's so poetic that it's not what we think of as just, you know, straight shooting kind of language. Asaf, not big into mincing words and not big into poeticness, you know. Judge the poor and the orphan and make sure they get a good shake. It's not very poetic, but it's exactly what he means. So Asaf likes to say exactly what he means. So what is it here that he's trying to get at? His point is a little more subtle than it would seem just from the straight reading of the verses. We have to daven for the kind of true justice that Asaf is talking about, that I'm trying to give examples of. Certainly we have to daven for that. And that's certainly something we can be thinking about when we're saying this kapitel. But the way you get true justice, and the way you increase Hashem's desire to give you true justice, let's call that external justice. You want to get a fair shake in the world around you. Hashem would like for you to have not only external justice, but internal justice. Justice, getting a fair shake, we just gave all kinds of examples, but it works inside a person too. Inside a person, you have a Yetzer Hara with all kinds of ideas as to what you should be doing. Some of those ideas are not so good. But you know how you go along with the Yetzer Hara is you're not honest. The Yetzer Hara lies to you. The Yetzer Hara says, you know, I have a great idea. Nobody will really know if you do this. And you say, yeah, right. No one will really know. Oh, you're lying to yourself. Not being a good judge. You're not being a good justice. You're not traipsing through the hallways and the byways of your mind and executing justice up and down one side and the other. Asaf is saying, external justice, why don't we have it? Let's see the big deal. Hashem wants justice. Why can't he just zap all the bad judges already? And let us have Yehoshaphat's back again. It's because you don't deserve it. Why don't we deserve it? We daven for it. We say it every day in Shemana Esrei. What more do you want? Okay, fine. Daven harder for it. That's not the point. You should daven harder for it. But the point is that if your inner justice is corrupted, Hashem doesn't see really how he's going to give you back external justice. If you're not going to give your own self a fair shake, you're not going to get a fair shake externally. People are corrupted by the desire and the temptation, just like the judge has his frame of reference. We have our own frame of reference too. It's better if I do this, and you know what? If I put a few extra minutes on my time card, that'll be more money I can give to tzedakah. And we all know that most of us right now are having a terrible time with it, right? Money is tight, they can't raise enough money. So you know what? This company won't miss an extra 10 minutes every day on the time card. So I'll just put those extra 10 minutes on, and that'll be $100. And you know what? Boy, my kid's school could really use this $100. And not only that, but my cousin in Israel, who's struggling every day for food, could really use that $100. He's going for a mitzvah. Is that justice? Because also, that's not justice. If you want judges that are going to come into your house and make sure you get a fair shake, then make sure that Hashem gets a fair shake from you. Make sure that what you do is honest with yourself. You're not putting 10 minutes in. There's nothing in the Torah that says you're allowed to cheat and lie and steal if it'll help your poor cousin in Israel. At least that I know of. You're not being honest. You're making up a whole lie, and you're doing the same thing that the judge is doing when he puts on his dark-colored glasses, is you're putting on your glasses and ignoring the reality. You know what? Tzedakah is so important and you're not looking over here at the Chumash that says don't lie, cheat, and steal. But tzedakah is very important. And you have your tzedakah glasses on. And all you're thinking about is tzedakah, and I have to give more tzedakah. You're not being honest. You're not taking off your glasses and giving a real honest look at what you're doing and whether what you're doing is the honest, best effort that you can do. You want judges to help you, says Hashem, then help me and help yourself by being an honest judge about yourself. Don't take bribes. Sending $100 to your kid's school is a bribe. It's a bribe to you to do the wrong thing. Hey, the Torah says, I got $100 for you. You just sold out your principles for $100. The fact that giving the $100 in tzedakah makes no difference. You can take the $100 and go buy 100 milkshakes at Dunkin' Donuts and you can get the same thing for it. You got bribed for $100. That wasn't, your price wasn't even that high. So that's what Asaf is trying to say. Don't be bribed yourself, and don't be dishonest when you're judging yourself if you want Hashem to bring back the judges of Yehoshaphat who will come through and make sure that you get a fair shake, then you better give yourself a fair shake. If you lie to yourself and you convince yourself that $100 I'm giving tzedakah is not a bribe, no good. Or if you convince yourself that, well, you know what? It's true that I usually daven mincha, but I've been pretty busy with the kids today. And really, kids are pretty important, right? I mean, everybody would agree to that. And kids are probably much more important. So I really... That's the exact same case as Asaf as the judge. You want good judges, judge yourself well. That's the message of the game. Questions?
When we were talking about being a judge, like, I was just thinking how Jewish people in Israel are judged to some extent in the world. It's more on a personal level.
No, it certainly also works on a communal level. Israel could do, you know, Israel could say good morning, and there'll be an article about how they've insulted night by not saying good night. Right? It's almost absurd. And we as Jews look at it and say, well, but the rest of the world is reading it. Oh, those Jews hate night. Right? And it doesn't. But yeah. And it's a communal thing as well. Those judges that we want wouldn't allow such a thing to happen. Those judges, you know, would not allow such a thing to happen. So it's definitely true on a communal level as well as on a personal level. And on a communal level, we tend to judge ourselves with shaded glasses as well. You know, how many times do you hear things like, yes, but, whatever it is. Oh, okay, here, there's a problem at a school, let's say. Yes, but in the last 50 years, we've established 4 trillion schools in the United States. Well, that's true. That doesn't mean that. So what? Right? People like to make excuses like that. Well, it's true, but you know how much duck of this community gives? Okay. That's interesting. But yeah, certainly true on a communal level.
What do you mean exactly a judge wouldn't judge that way? You mean if the Goyim had true judges...
Correct. Right? In the end, in the last pasuk, he wants Hashem to destroy all the corrupt judges of the world, which would mean all the nations of the world. Justice being required for the world to exist is not just within Jews. There has to be justice in the whole world. I mean, not to be sarcastic or anything, but Noah wasn't Jewish. And the world was wiped out. Justice is, you know, and the seventh mitzvah, the seven mitzvahs of B'nai Noach, is you must have justice. So it's a requirement of the whole world to have a solid system of justice, not just of us.
Is it possible that, because you've spoken before about Midah Kenevi, that the reason Klal Yisrael is judged so negatively is because maybe Klal Yisrael itself is not?
Yes. Yes. The question, I don't know if the paper, the question is it possible that it's a mita keneged mita? Just as we're being somewhat dishonest about how we look at ourselves, the world is being dishonest at how they look at us. And that would be And that's like a mita k'neged mita. It's not that a specific punishment. That's how the world works. We do A and they do B. That's certainly possible. I would say more than possible, it's probable. I mean, as close as I could get without actually knowing what goes on in Shemayim, I would agree with that statement.
Yes. You just look at everything that's going on in the world, and you have Mugabe killing his people, and you have the Tigris killing other people, thousands and thousands of people.
Right.
And you've got all these things, and they're just
and that has little to do with us. I mean,
yeah,
it's just
thing on Gaza.
Right. Gaza's the big problem. Why? Because nobody knows why. Because it's Jewish people doing it.
Okay.
Right. If you know Pakistanis were invading Gaza, well, you know they deserve it. But you're right. And you don't see everyday reports of all just atrocities in the whole world. I forgot there was once an interesting article about since in the last like 4,000 years, how many years of peace have there been where there are no major wars going on in the world? And it was some teeny number. I don't remember exactly what it was, like out of 4,000 years or like 50 years or something where there wasn't a major world, some sort of major war going on. And I don't remember how they defined major wars versus minor ones. But the point was that every day, if you wanted to, they could be talking about atrocities all over. And instead, they're not. Instead, it's the latest news from the Gaza Strip. Little teeny tiny piece of land in a place that few Americans could identify on a map if they had to, and forget all the other atrocities. Any other questions?
I might have missed it. I'm not talking. What you are angelic creatures. What is
so Hashem is telling judges that if you judge accurately and fairly, you are almost like angels. You are like the highest level of man accomplishment. Because you're as close to what I do as possible. If I, Hashem, Kaviyachol, judge, and you are judging, you're almost like a malach. You're almost like a heavenly creature. Any other questions?